Encourage me the whole way long. Make me say, ow! What's poppin', New York? What's poppin', Los Angeles? What the fuck's poppin', San Francisco? Indonesia, holla at your boy! That's right, and you motherfuckers in China, drop the chopsticks! Holla at your boy! Hey, yo. Thanks for tuning in to Nestorious Public Radio. I am your host, Nestor Rodriguez, a.k.a.
Nestorious. Yo, the crazy Puerto Rican on the streets reporting. What's going on? My name's Simon Kaufman. We're here for another hour of hilarity. And I just want to send a shout out, you know, to all you men out there mad because your girlfriend's sending me naked pictures on a text message. Doesn't mean I want them. Don't be mad at me.
Your woman, so she don't have to send Simon Kaufman naked pictures.
You think I need this? Leave me alone. I'm trying to do my radio show and get my life in order.
He's trying to hold on to his ball sack.
I don't need all this stupid shit. I don't need to see your girlfriend, and I don't need you following up and getting mad at me.
Yeah, and you're distracting him. He's trying to hold on.
We're trying to do Nestorious Public Radio.
Yeah,
read up about it.
Yeah, and to my motherfucking left is my main man, Rich Corbin.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah.
How you doing?
That's right. How you doing? Yo.
Bring down the level.
Yo, what's up, everybody?
How you doing?
How you doing? And we got a special guest tonight, live from motherfucking New York, from Santa Monica via New York, I should say, is my main man, Peter Grossman.
Yo, how you doing?
Yo, how you doing, baby? Hey, yo, hey, you know what? Right off the bat, we were just having something to eat a little while before the show, as we normally do, as the fat fucks that we are here in Los Angeles.
Well, not Rich, because he's cleansing.
Yeah, Rich is cleansing. He's juicing.
I'm on a juice diet.
Yeah.
Liquid diet.
But I was talking. I asked Simon, did I ever say anything to you about Peter's father? I think I told Richard, your father is a pretty successful and well-known composer.
Yes, he is.
That's what I wanted to say. And your father, didn't he compose a couple of Michael Jackson's fucking number one hits?
He did. Michael Jackson recorded a song called Gone Too Soon, which was on the Dangerous album.
Right.
And it was actually dedicated to Ryan White,
Who's Ryan White?
He was the boy he befriended who had AIDS back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Did Michael befriended?
Michael befriended, and then they were about to release it as a single, and next thing you know, all the allegations came out against Michael Jackson. They were going to have to kind of put that on the back burner.
So what was the name of the song again?
It's called Gone Too Soon, and it's since been recorded by a couple people recorded it actually at Michael Jackson's memorial. Babyface sang it at the memorial.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah. Okay. And now your father composed this song. He wrote it.
He wrote it.
For Michael.
He didn't write it for Michael.
He wrote it,
And
MJ Productions wanted to take it.
A guy who my dad collaborated with for many years, a gentleman by the name of Buzz Cohan, actually...
Cohan,
who is the father of Genji Cohan, who did Weeds.
Got it. And
that's her dad.
Got it.
Anyway... He and my dad worked together for many, many years, and he knew Michael since he was a little kid, and they were getting ready to go start producing Dangerous, and he sent him the track, and he loved it and wanted to record it, and so made it on the album, so it's pretty
cool. Nice. And what else did your father do? I know we went to your father's house. My man had fucking platinum records up the ass. Your father had more platinum records than my fucking family had platters to eat out of on the fucking wall.
He's got a few. He's got a couple of Emmys and shit.
So he done music for television as well.
Music for television, a little bit of film. Also, his real passion is Broadway. He loves the theater.
Nice.
But he's also done a lot of who's recorded. Stevie Wonder has recorded some of his stuff. Who else?
That girl's got a on me, thought she's on a living high, fam, fam.
So, but actually, at Christmas, one of the things that gets played a lot is, you ever see the duet of David Bowie and Bing Crosby.
Absolutely.
So the medley that or the melody that David Bowie sings called "Peace on Earth," he wrote with Buzz Cohan. It was for a Bing Crosby special back
your
in
father.
1978.
Damn.
Yeah. So
tell me your father's name again.
Larry.
Larry. Big up, what's up, Larry? Motherfucker. Big up, Larry Grossman. You musical motherfucker. Your father's back in New York, right?
No, he lives here in L.A.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he's right here in L.A.
He is in L.A.
He moved out here almost 2 years ago.
You know what? I asked you that shit, but he lived up in New York.
He lives in New York. Yeah. I mean, he grew up in Chicago.
Got it.
Moved to New York after college.
And you look like your father a little bit.
I do.
Yeah. Larry, he's all right. Larry and I kicked it.
Yeah.
Larry and I were kicking it at Kent's wedding.
Absolutely.
Kent, you fuck, you know you're listening, man. Pick up the fucking phone and call 1-800-893-9562. That's our number. If you're listening live, you know, I always call us, but I know a lot of our listeners are not listening to us live, which is fine. You know, Nestorius Public Radio loves you no matter what. You know what I mean? I want you to know that. But if you are at home, in your Fruit of the Looms, eating cornflakes.
Not doing shit.
With your life. With rice milk and stale fucking rotten raspberries.
Yesterday's muffins in a tray.
Yeah. And your life, you've come to the conclusion that your life is absolutely not amounting to shit. Call us. 1-800-893-9562. Don't kill yourself yet. Don't give up. Don't jump. There's hope. All right. There you go.
There's hope.
That's right. Tonight, we will be discussing, or at least trying to discuss, Bloomberg, Mayor Cocksucking Bloomberg from New York. He's trying to require people to food compost or compost food. And the special report editorial on how under Bloomberg's regime, there's been more homeless motherfuckers in New York. And although the news media reports that New York is a safer and better place to live. For who? Anyway, we're going to be discussing that. We're going to be discussing voter rights, minimum wage, job interviews, and we're going to be discussing headhunting. Peter Grossman, headhunting. He's a headhunter. Not what you think, but very close. Anyway, we're back. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because we do it like that.
That's what you have to.
You know what I'm saying?
It's not for us, it's for America.
It's for the people.
Right?
You know what I'm saying?
They need to hear this.
Yeah, it's for the fucking people. The people need to hear some shit.
Yeah. Hey, before we continue, can we get the heat turned up in the studio a little bit? I feel like there's a part of my shirt that isn't sweat through. I'd like to get to that now, if possible.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me it was a sweat lodge down here. I mean, it's, yeah.
Big the fuck up to the radiation companies, man. People at home in your air conditioning, you should be happy that you're sitting at home and you have the luxury of calling in or listening to the show at your leisure, okay? Because if you're not listening to the show live, there's no excuse for you not to go to iTunes and go to podcast and look for Nestorius Public Radio and subscribe to the show and download every episode and listen to them at your convenience. Yeah. And then telling somebody about it, letting them do the same thing also, okay?
Yeah, don't fuck around. Go to iTunes, you download it at your leisure. We've seen some of you people. We've seen what some of your leisure consists of, and you need to make some changes in your life.
Make some changes is all we're saying.
Some of your leisure is a little out of hand.
Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, 4th of July, we didn't have a live show, but a couple of weeks ago, we had my man Leslie Small here in the studio, director Leslie Small, director of Kevin Hart's Let Me Explain. And we're talking about, you know, the DOMA Act being repealed and gay marriage being allowed back in California and all this other shit. And we gently touched on the fact that while that was going on, the Supreme Court struck down a core component of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Okay? Now, for those of you that don't know what that is, let me explain. Back in 1965... certain people were not allowed to vote. Or I should say, they weren't allowed. allowed to vote.
They had the legal right to vote, but they were being
railroaded.
They made it very difficult.
Thank you. So
they were getting poll blocked.
The end result was they weren't allowed to vote. By that I mean there were guards saying, "What the fuck you doing here? What are you doing? Where are you going? It's Sunday. Sorry, the polls are closed." Blah 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 blah. And basically, the southern states basically changed their polling rules as they felt, you know, as they deemed necessary. So, and usually that involved whenever there was a black rapper that came in back in 1965, and they said, "Sorry, boy, we're closed right now. Come back at 3. And then they come at 3 and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so basically this act basically prevented local governments from changing the polling laws in their cities or states without first consulting the federal government. In other words, if a local municipality wanted to change a specific, you know, whatever, we're not gonna do this. We're not gonna open the polls on Sunday for early voters. They would have to, you know, write to the federal government. The federal government have to review it, and they would have to say, no or yes. Anyway, so this part of the Voters Act was repealed. It was taken away. So Congress can no longer require 9 mostly southern states to get federal approval before changing their voting procedures. Okay, under the act, keystone of civil rights era legislation, jurisdictions with a history of racial discrimination had been required to have any change in their election law or practices pre-cleared by the federal government. Anyway, you know, the fucked up thing about it is that they basically said that times are different. Basically, that's the reason it was repealed. Because, you know, we're not living under the same racist conditions. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, everyone's so happy now. We have all these different flavors of Starburst.
Yeah. And pixie dust straws. Yeah, remember?
Yeah, they have vibrating dildos.
Yeah,
for you to jack off with. Yeah. They have Cheetos now. They have all different flavors of Cheetos. Who needs to worry about? Everyone's so happy now in this country.
That all helps.
Right? Everyone gets along so well. There's no racism. The LAPD isn't racist.
Right. Well, what it is they use the, well, slavery's not around. We've moved, you know, we've progressed as a society, as a culture. Taking the fact that in southern states, there still are problems with polling laws. Just in this past election, another component of voting in the South is the Sunday early voting that they do in the South. And traditionally, it was to allow black church-going families to go and vote near their church, because a lot of them didn't have transportation and they pretty much had to work 24/7, unlike some motherfuckers, you know what I mean, that have cars to take them to the poll or they can, you know, change the whole. But anyway, so well,
that's really interesting that you say that. And I brought this up on the show, and I don't think I elaborated before, but when LA County was voting to get rid of the rent control thing, they attached 2 things on the bill saying that, okay, listen, if we get rid of rent control, then the city can't come in and bulldoze your house to put a freeway in there, okay?
Can't.
But if you do vote to get rid of rent control, or if you do vote
for
get
allow rid of, to
yeah,
rent
if you
control.
Allow if you allow rent control to exist, then the city does have the ability to bulldoze your house and come in and put a freeway in there. So that's how they put it on the ballot. So I went to go vote because I lived in an apartment at the time.
Right, and you don't want your apartment to get bulldozed.
No, I don't want...
Fucking matters.
The rent is controlled.
I don't want my rent control to go down because, fuck, I was paying nothing for this place.
Right.
So you have the rent control, but we've bulldozed the whole building.
No. So you vote so that they can't take down the rent control.
Right. So I go to vote, and I go there, and it's at a Goodwill on the corner of Laurel Canyon and Moore Park.
Moore Park, yeah.
Right there. Okay,
next to the fucking professional martial arts boxing joint. That's where I work out, by the way.
They never take those fucking punching bags.
This is on the corner of fucking Laurel Canyon and Moore Park, and there's punching bags, kick bags. They're all outside. So I joke around and tell them, "Yo, I work out here every day at 2 a.m. because it's free. It's my gym. It's free.
Yeah. It's free.
Kickboxing.
So I go there to vote, right? And then I get there, and they said, "Hey, sorry, but they've changed the polling place." Okay, I said, "Okay, where?" And they go, "The address is on the card.
You did in the window." Hold on a second. You didn't tell them at that point that you weren't black.
They were surprised. They were surprised.
I mean, at that point, I would have said, guys.
It's more classism in this sense, because the reason why they did this last minute, because they sent all this stuff out and they put it on the card, is they put the wrong address. They put the address as Moore Park, and I put it in the GPS, and I ended up in the middle of the park on the other side of Laurel Canyon.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what? I bet these motherfuckers fucked up, and they met Riverside. So I went up to Riverside, and of course, it was on Riverside. And they changed it last minute. And I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck? So I go in and I go, they changed this last minute. I'm talking to a guy at the polling place. I go, why did they do this? Is this because people in apartments have more mobility issues? People in apartments have less cars. People in houses, they have more money. They can get around and all of that. Is that kind of a way that they were trying to level the playing field? And the guy looked at me stone-faced and was like, yeah, they do this shit all the time.
This is a guy
working at the polling place.
A volunteer, because no one works there. It's a volunteer.
Yeah, he's voluntarily
working. That's just an opinion.
It's an opinion, but
all
it's
those
an
guys, by the
guy.
Way, are volunteering. No one gets paid for that.
Well, then.
So then they're really stupid. But the point is,
that this guy tells me that they do this type of the chicanery all the time. They fucking do this.
Chicanery!
Pull that one out of my ass.
They do this
all the time because they didn't want as many, because there are a lot more people in Los Angeles living in apartments, living in rent-controlled apartments than there are in the houses. And the person who was behind this bill anyway just happened to be the guy who owns the most apartment buildings in Los Angeles.
Right.
So this thing is important, but they're still going to do their shit.
That's a good kind of example, because you see, to do that type of shit, was to change polling places or misinform the people of the time of the polling places or where the polling locations were.
This just gives them ample latitude in their ability to do these types of things. And let's face it, man,
you're in the South, you're African-American, you're working fucking class. The last thing you do is have time for bullshit or to fight or whatever. I mean, you know, it's messed up. Anyway,
listen, it's pretty hard to get around in my little scooter thing from going to Moore Park to Riverside. Right. That's hard, especially, you know.
Anyway, you know what? Fuck you. Fuck you, Supreme Court, for allowing this shit to happen. Fuck you, fucking Southern voting places, you cocksuckers. I hope your voting polls fucking locations blow up before any black person wants to fucking show up, all right? You heard that right from me. The views expressed here are not those views of any of my guests.
The views of NPR are at the sole discretion of the host and do not reflect the station or station management.
That's absolutely right.
Big up to legalities.
That's absolutely right. People got to be informed about this shit. Anyway, look, we got to move on. We got a fucking crazy show. How crazy is it?
It used to be crazy. Your vote didn't count. Now no one's even there counting your vote. How crazy is it? Yo, how crazy is it?
It's fucking crazy. All right, so most of us are from New York. Peter, you're native New Yorker.
Native New Yorker, born and bred, baby.
You and I met each other in New York in 1990. Fucking great year.
Absolutely.
We just missed the fucking, the Medellin fucking drug cartel. You know what I mean? We fucking slid under the door. Like, hi, we're alive. You know what I'm saying?
What'd you miss?
And 1990. And New York, you know, was in a transitional period in 1990.
Absolutely.
You know, because the 80s were fucking crack the fuck out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, historically, you may have heard me say in the 70s, New York was like in a complete deficit. Like, The sanitation wasn't picking up the garbage. It was hell. Okay? Mayor Koch took, he was the only crazy motherfucker to say, I'll be the mayor. He was mayor for 2 years.
He was the mayor for 12 years.
12 years, excuse me. Three terms.
Three terms.
He put out a music video.
No, three terms. He didn't give a shit. He's one of the most liked, most controversial, and most hated mayors of all time, okay? Rightfully so.
But most of these guys, once they're in for the third term, they go from most liked to most hated.
Absolutely. Mayor Koch is a closet homosexual that did nothing, okay? Nothing to fucking support gay rights or the other thing that was going on in the 80s with the AIDS epidemic. He did nothing. So that's how controversial the fucking guy was. He was like, fuck the fags. I mean, that's how he was. He was straight up like that.
And he used to fuck the fags.
Well, I don't know what he used to do. He was a closet. We're not talking about Koch. We're talking about the history of New York City from the 70s to the 80s. So we got out of the fucking, like the dregs of shit in the 70s, thanks to Mayor Ed Koch.
Correct.
And fucking David Dinkins tried to fucking, you know, jerk everything off in the early 80s, right?
In the early 90s. From 88 to 92.
Excuse me, because, right, in early 90s. So the 80s were cracked.
I think the
80s were cracked out. No, I'm thinking the early 80s.
Timeline's all over the place.
I'm thinking the early 80s. But
no, Jupiter.
No,
Jupiter. You're not
going to
believe what happened.
The early 80s, that was Koch's term. I'm thinking, so Koch ended like in fucking late 80s.
Late 80s,
got it. So, and so of course there was hope. Black mayor, blah, blah, blah. He was flaccid. He was fucking useless, Mayor Dinkins.
And the economy tanked again in New York in the early 90s after the stock market crashed.
Right. And we were talking about this earlier. The stock market crashed because of the phony fucking stimulus of the economy because Reagan fucking, you know, the whole bonds and credit and all that other bullshit, which we'll get into some of that stuff in a bit. But so fast forward, you know, Rudy Giuliani takes over in the mid-90s. He's an ex-fucking...
He's a U.S. attorney.
U.S. attorney who stood head on against the mafia. He was one of the only dudes that said, fuck you, we don't care. So at the beginning, you thought, man, Giuliani, wow, this guy's the real deal, right?
Absolutely.
He ain't taking shit from nobody. In plain sight, on TV, he was like, we're not afraid of the mob, we're not afraid of organized crime, and we're going to get down to the bottom of it. Great hero, right? Whoever did that before. Then 9/11 comes. I mean, he does a lot of things here and there to keep New York safer. And little by little, New York starts to change. You know, come 2000, the early years of 2000, 2001, 9/11 happens. All of a sudden, panic starts, you know, in the nation and New York. Bloomberg takes over. Now, Bloomberg is one of the richest motherfuckers in this country, okay? He owns a lot of media veins, so he can manipulate fucking news as he pleases, financial and otherwise. He's the only mayor, I think, that has not taken a salary because he doesn't have to. He's a fucking...
Well, he does have a TV channel, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well,
he's a filthy fucking rich
calendar. He's got a desk calendar.
He's got stickers. He's got fucking QR codes.
He's got an iPhone
5. He's on iTunes. He's new and noteworthy, okay?
Net worth of $27 billion.
Billion.
Wow.
Is there a we in billion? No. It's just
We need to get a lot of these billionaires out of office because who gives a shit if they don't fucking take a fucking
paycheck? Well, here's the deal.
Here's the thing, though. When you're a CEO of a company, companies are not democracies. When you're CEO, it's like my way or the highway. This is what I'm doing. And like you're either with me or you're not. And that. But as an elected officials, that's not how government works.
Right.
But that's how he's been running New York.
That's how he's been running New York. And so here's the flip side of that, Rich. The thing is, people tend to trust people with money, right? You think New York. No, I'm saying New York.
I agree that they can manage money. They know how to handle all this stuff and all that.
Right.
But the problem is that they tend to just manage the money. They don't manage the people.
They tend to manage things for people who have money.
Right.
Exactly.
So for those of you that don't know, you know, this is, again, my opinion. I personally loved New York City when you can walk up Times Square and see three crack whore fucking herpy lipped hookers ask you to suck your cock, for $5. You see, because I felt like an American. I felt like I had a choice.
Everyone could afford it.
Right. But I felt like I could do it or not do it. It was a choice. I walk up fucking Times Square now. I don't have a choice.
$200 for just for a dinner date.
No, I don't have a choice. I get bombarded, ass fucked, visually fucked by Disneyland.
It is. It's Disneyland.
It's fucking Disneyland. It's like, I want Times Square to be Times Square. I want New York to be New York, the New York I fucking knew. That's when I knew, and that was in the early 90s when Times Square started the fucking development project. And look, I'm not hating on fixing things up, making them safer. You know I'm an electrician by trade.
Don't let Disney do it.
Well, no, they can't.
How many fucking M&Ms do you need, you fat, greasy, shit-steen fuckface? Well, your whole family looks like a yellow peanut M&M. You're walking in the fucking place. Three levels of M&Ms, you cocksuckers.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like this. Look. It's not all black and white. If you look at Grand Central...
They got pink M&Ms now.
If you look at Grand Central Station, right? Grand Central Station stood to be torn down in the 70s.
It did.
Jackie O... First of all, Grand Central Station was crack, heroin. It was fucking... It was like a... You wouldn't want to walk through there.
No.
All right? Between Vanderbilt and fucking Lexington and 3rd Avenue in that area, which is crazy. You know what I mean? So thanks to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, she fought for... To keep the Grand Central Station preserved. They formed this thing called the Grand Central Partnership, in which the businesses along that area chipped in, and what they did was they hired transient guys from jail and homeless people, and they gave them jobs. Brilliant! You know what I mean?
Yeah, clean up the neighborhood.
Clean up the neighborhood, give people jobs, and they spanked up Grand Central Station.
And they bought legitimate businesses in there, restaurants,
legitimate
stores.
Legitimate businesses, restaurants, the Oyster Bar. I mean, it's amazing. You wouldn't want to eat nothing in there in the 70s.
No.
It was fucking rats and roaches. I mean, seriously, if you were a kid and you walked through the shuttle to go from Grand Central to Times Square and back, and you walked through Grand Central Station, you'd be like, this is nasty. You know what I mean? So she got it together. I actually had the privilege of working on lighting the facade of Grand Central Station from across the Lincoln Building, across the street from the Lincoln Building, where
Dayton, 60 East 42nd
60
Street,
60 East 42nd, where Dayton had a fucking office.
Yeah.
Our friend Dayton, you know. Big up Dayton.
You're dating yourself.
So basically. They fixed it, so it's not black and white. So Times Square, it's atrocious, man. So then the next thing this fucking guy does, look, New York is a pedestrian society. People walk. They walk wherever they feel like walking. The first thing he starts doing is he starts blocking intersections from pedestrian access. You can't cross the street here. You have to cross the street over there, right? And then he starts changing fucking... direction of traffic. Like, you could only go up fucking the west side through this street and then come back. Basically, look, I'll cut to the chase. He's created a clusterfuck, not only for fucking pedestrians, but for traffic. The last thing he did, and I'm going to get into the health concerns that he fucking implemented, the last thing he did was he creates these bike lanes. So now, cars that used to be parked on opposite ends of the streets, they have to be parked where there was another lane. So there's a bike lane next to the sidewalk now, and there's like a little island, and then the parking now takes up a lane where cars used to drive. So now you're taking fucking passageways for fucking cars to drive through on the streets. What does that happen? What does that mean? That means that a cab ride that would have taken me 10 fucking minutes now takes me 35 fucking minutes.
And cost you $20
more.
It cost
me $20. So you know what?
But
Fuck you. I'm going to walk, okay? Fuck you, Bloomberg. I'm walking. I'm not taking a cab. Cocksucker.
The bike lanes are ridiculous. I thought when they first put them in, they wanted the bicyclists to ride down them so we could run them over. I didn't get it.
That's what I thought.
It's so stupid.
That's what I thought, because
Row your bike fucking somewhere else.
Anyway, so he's basically, in essence, fucked up New York. He's created it to be a playground for the rich, basically, because unless you're like me and have a 3-bedroom rent-controlled apartment on East 100th Street in fucking Spanish Harlem, you're shit out of luck. I'm just letting you know. You know what I'm saying? I'm just letting you know that Uncle Ness, he's got that shit down, okay? I got that shit down. So, what is the next thing he does? He starts regulating the size of Coca-Cola or soft drinks that you can have. Because you're a fat fuck and you can't fucking regulate how much calories you take. So all the rest of us now have to pay. Right? If I want a fucking super-sized Coke, I can't have one.
If I want a big gulp, I can't have one.
If I want a fucking big gulp, it's summertime. 7-Eleven, big gulp.
Yeah. Maybe you're going to go on a journey. And you need a lot of that for, you know, you don't want to suck it down right away.
Yeah, maybe you're going to go on a journey to the adult movie theater, and you need a big gulp.
Maybe you're going to take a little bit of time later.
But here's the question that really comes down with this whole thing.
What's the question?
What is the role of government in interfering when it comes to something like sodas that are disgustingly bad for people? You got 9-year-olds with type 2 diabetes.
You think that's the government's responsibility?
No, that's the question.
I think the government's responsibility is to regulate the fucking banking industry, okay? I think it's the government's responsibility to fucking make sure that the people who are getting paid by our tax dollars to protect us and to protect our rights, I think it's the government's responsibility to do that shit. Don't go in here trying to micromanage how much soda you drink, what food you eat, and all this other bullshit. Well, you want to regulate something? Regulate genetically modified fucking foods. Go to the source. Go to Monsanto. Yeah. Regulate those motherfuckers.
They're cherry picking. They're cherry picking whatever is not going to hurt the people who are fucking in their pocket
at that
point.
The rich motherfuckers.
Exactly.
Right. Who can we allow the public to see that we're doing something for them? Meanwhile, the people who we really need to go after, we won't. We were discussing this in the other show, okay? There's a conspiracy amongst chocolate companies, Mars and shit like that in Canada. Yeah. So of course they make a big deal. Oh, they're trying to fix fucking chocolate prices in Canada. Who gives a fuck? There are more important things to deal with. Again, you want to regulate food? Regulate Monsanto. Regulate soybean fucking bullshit. Regulate the fact that you genetically modify all sorts of shit. You don't even know what the fuck you're eating. You don't know. This 4th of July, I'm making hot dogs, okay? And out of the blue, I decide, let me see who makes these. Wait, my wife and I are having this discussion. We don't even know where our food comes from. I have ballpark friends. Franks, what's more fucking American than hot dogs?
Well, apple pie.
Apple pie.
And baseball.
And baseball.
Yes. And racism.
So Bruce, and racism. Bruce Springsteen. And racism.
And racism. But we're talking about traditional, right? Traditional. Wink, wink. Wink, 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 wink. So, my athlete named Ballpark Franks. Guess where the buns are made?
Canada.
Mexico.
Yeah. Wrong
Mexico.
Coast.
All right.
What do you want? You want them made in Mexico or do you want them made here by a Mexican guy? What's the difference?
Well, here's the difference. And that's an interesting question. Here's the difference.
I'd like them made by somebody who...
I want them made here.
Yeah.
By a Mexican. Okay? Because a Mexican's going to work. He's going to make money. From that money, he's going to pay taxes. That tax goes into our economy. That tax goes into the economy. The economy goes better. They can hire more fucking Mexicans to make more fucking buns. Okay? That's the problem.
So you do want a Mexican making your bun. It's just a geographical question.
You asked the question, would you want a Mexican, right? I said, I'd rather have a Mexican making the buns here in the United States than our fucking money, our production, our services being produced outside of the United States.
But it costs too much to pay a Mexican in this country to make bread in this country, as Hostess will say.
Will attest to.
If a Mexican
it's cheaper to pay a Mexican in Mexico than it is to a guy that's already here.
Well, we're gonna get into all this stuff because this conversation is gonna go right into what we were talking about. Go ahead.
If a Mexican's not available, what's your second choice?
A handicapped guy, because a white fucking person ain't gonna take a job like that. A typical white American guy is not gonna take that
white
job.
White people don't even make white bread anymore. What's going on in this country?
But I'm saying, a typical white American, I grew up on the East Coast. I'm a union electrician, okay? When I grew up, as an electrician, as a union guy, most of those fucking white guys from Long Island, their thing is like, ah, oh, fuck them. They're so gung-ho anti-anybody that's not white to do anything. But meanwhile, if there was no construction work, I guarantee you not one of those guys would go out and cultivate some fucking spinach if they had to, okay? Or babysit some kids. Or clean some fucking rooms in a motel, okay? So let's face it. That's another conversation altogether. If I want my buns baked in Mexico by a Mexican or my buns baked in America by a Mexican, guess what I'll take?
Well, you know, you always right. You go to Mexico and they say, oh, be careful. Don't eat the food. Don't drink the right. water. And then you sit in a restaurant here and who brings you the water and the food?
Right. White guys.
No, Mexicans.
Yeah, right. I don't know what
Mexican
fucking restaurant.
Brings you the water.
The water and the food?
Yeah.
Oh, right. The white guy takes the order keeps the tip.
I'm saying you go to Mexico, yeah. They say, don't drink the water, don't eat the food. You sit down in a restaurant, who comes up with the water and the food?
And where was your food cultivated and made and processed, as we just found
out? All right. So here's the deal. Here's the deal. So there's a... You know, the minimum wage is looking to be raised again. And I believe the minimum wage, has it been changed from $7.25 yet, or is it still $7.25?
I think it's $8 now.
The federal minimum wage? Because, of course, any state can charge, can pay.
No, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour.
Right. Okay, that's what I thought. So President Obama has suggested raising the minimum wage to $9 earlier this year. And he was accused of being a dangerous retributionist.
Which means what? What's a retributionist?
Look it up. You have a computer, right?
No. I think he said redistributionist.
Hey, can we edit that, Nick?
Okay, hold on.
Redistributionist. Right. He was a dangerous
What's wrong with that?
He was a dangerous redistributionist.
Ladies and gentlemen, please be on the lookout for a dangerous redistributionist.
Yeah.
Well, but that's at a time when this country used to be kind of a closed circuit where things were made in this country, yeah, things were bought in this country, but
ladies
now
that's what it means.
The money.
Ladies and gentlemen, be on the lookout for a crazy, wild redistributionist.
He could be armed and dangerous.
Yeah. He might be trying to give everybody your money.
He's basically taking money away from other people and fucking distributing it.
That's what they're letting all these companies do, though. That's what they're letting all the big companies do.
Well, it's okay if companies do it.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah. Companies can do that.
A redistributionist is one who believes in or advocates a welfare state.
Right.
Anyone who can say redistributionist three times might be a redistributionist.
Redistributionist.
So you can do it.
All right. So anyway, so a redistributionist, and I called him, what did I call him?
You called him
a retributionist.
Look up what a retribution is.
We know what it means, someone who...
George Bush.
Who retributionsists.
Okay, so, but I'm not arguing for a higher minimum wage out of some sense of morality or social justice. I make the case as a businessman. This is the guy who's writing this article, Nick... Hanauer from Bloomberg.com, aptly, Bloomberg.com, right?
Yeah. Bloomberg.
So he says, this is an interesting thing, though. He goes, I'm not arguing for a higher minimum wage out of some sense of morality or social justice. I make the case as a businessman and entrepreneur who sees our millions of low-paid workers as customers to be cultivated and not as costs to be cut. Significantly raising the minimum wage would boost our economy by $450 billion each year, giving more purchasing power to millions, and with it, more profits to businesses. For the small government set of those who view my meddling with wages as needless government interference, consider this additional benefit. Putting more cash in workers' pockets would substantially reduce government intervention and dependency on public assistance programs. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Man,
but this is what
would happen. So you raise minimum wage, they're just going to raise the price of their fucking iPods. They're going to raise the price of milk. They're going to raise the price of chicken because they're going to have to, because it's costing them to pay the people more money. That's essentially what it does.
Well, when you talk about raising minimum wage, right, and for it to affect everybody else, all of us, the way you're describing it, we're then just talking about manufacturing, okay? Because when it comes to service or goods, service and goods, they primarily depend on fuel, transportation. When you talk about goods, when you talk about foods, when you talk about items that are sold, electronics, whatever the fuck, to get from point A to point B requires trucks.
Yeah, but exactly. But what I'm saying is that when the company is going to make less money because they're paying their employees more. But see, I guess, I don't know. They're not really paying their employees in this country. They're paying them somewhere else.
How does this help the economy? You're asking a company to pay more out now in the hopes that they'll have more money and they'll come and buy back later. It really doesn't make a ton of sense. I'd like to hear what Peter has to say about it.
Yeah,
the redistributionist, cut master, flex mister.
Well, first of all, we talked about Peter briefly. We introduced him as a headhunter, but Peter, you worked in the financial sector for a while.
Yes, for a long time.
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years,
over
yes.
10 years.
Over 15 years.
Over 15 years. You were... I worked
on the trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange for several different firms. Executing.
Picking up the phone, I'll take.
Executing poor people.
How many stocks of Apple? Okay, $500 share.
Did you have fistfuls of paper and all that? Like in trading places. Like that, that's just me. That's crazy.
I mean,
that's
an extreme. The commodities markets, their style of trading is a little bit different. Uh-huh. But if there was news out on a stock and it was going crazy, you'd have 20, 30 guys in there yelling and screaming and punching each other. I've seen guys get black eyes and broken noses.
Why I was selling a lot of crack to some of those white guys so they could forget their pain?
Yeah, exactly.
that's a very high stress job, huh?
Definitely.
Oh, hell
but
yeah.
It was fun. I mean, it was a cool place to work. I mean, it was a lot of interesting characters who work down there.
Yo, I'm surprised anybody's wearing a suit.
You give me a stock tip, I sell you some yayo, and we all live happily ever after, okay?
Yo, you got the tip, I got the yayo. But first you got to show me the tip before I give it to drugs.
What's your take on this, raising the minimum wage?
So if you do the math, $7.25 an hour, 40-hour week, that's $290 a week. Long story short, you're making a little over $15,000 a year. I don't know anybody who can live on $15,000 a year, unless you live in like North Dakota or something like that.
Now go back to the mathematical equation. $7.25
times 40 hours a week is $290 a week. That's before taxes.
That's before taxes. You know how much of that money the government takes? That's before taxes.
You know
how much money that person takes a week? $100, $150, maybe.
No,
maybe.
They skim off about 20%.
What?
They skim off about 20%.
Well, at the most.
It depends on your dependents.
Right, if you don't. But a lot. Most of the people in this country procreate.
They'll take over 40%.
No, they're not going to take that much because the gross isn't. Isn't at that level.
I got to check a fucking residual check. No lie. $125. You know how much money I got out of it? $54. I'll show you the fucking
stuff.
Yeah,
but they're taking out for all your kids you have everywhere.
They ain't taking out for nothing. Because
you get money back for having kids. Single people get fucked.
Yeah, right. But not when you don't
claim
money.
Explain that to me. Granted, they're taxing me for federal. They're taking out Social Security. Taking off of Medicaid, they're taking off of New York State, and they're taking off of California. But even the California is only a couple of dollars.
They're taking out for the Milky Way. There's a Milky Way tax. There's state, federal, and universal tax.
What I'm saying is, trust me, you're not taking that much money home.
No, you're not taking that much money home. Exactly. But the point is that if someone is making over 20% more, if you raise it up to $9, which would still, you know, which would then at 40, it would be $360 a week. Not exactly,
Not exactly fucking Hampton vacation
exactly,
money.
Exactly. Yeah. But that will...
$360 a week, that comes out to about maybe $290 take home, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
If you're fucking lucky.
So, but...
And, you know, if you sell some cocaine and some angel dust on the side, you can subsidize, not only your pain for being a minority, but you could also subsidize your income.
But that still puts you...
So it's a win-win situation for everybody.
But they still... That'll put you in at making, you know, gross $18,700 a year.
$9 a year.
College students make more than that.
Yeah. So you're okay. So, but you're talking gross annual figures.
But I mean, but the reality is, you know, in this day and age, in 2013, I don't know anybody who can
live on that,
sustain themselves on that little income.
But then the argument is this, Peter. The argument is this: a lot of the people who are making minimum wage are uneducated. They don't have any skills, any job skills. So they're only able to get certain types of jobs, which only pay minimum wage. So that's the argument. No?
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, so if you know, it depends on, you know, what they're doing. But at some point, I mean, these people are doing jobs that nobody else wants to do.
Right.
But they need to get done.
Right.
So, but they should be paid a fair wage to do it.
Right. So, but who's to say what's a fair wage? Right, because if the employer says that they can only afford to pay this,
I'll tell you a fair wage is what somebody is willing to do it for. As soon as nobody's willing to do it for that dollar, now the price has to go up. But if you got people lining up to do it for $7, you don't have to pay $8.
Not according to Peter's illustration. A fair wage would be something that someone would get per hour so that it would facilitate them to have a decent way of living.
It costs a lot more to live in this country than it did in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
It really does.
And in New York and California, even more so.
Exactly. You know, with rent going up, the cost of a house. I mean, there's so many more people in apartments.
Forget house, dude. We're not talking about people who live in houses.
But back then, you could go and get a job, and you didn't have to be necessarily college educated. You just had to go and get a job and do your job, and you could have a family, and you could do those things, and it was the American dream.
Right.
But now the American dream is, Jesus Christ, I hope I can fucking pay my rent, you know?
The American dream is butt implants and be like Kim Kardashian and be fabulous in a limousine.
Man, Peter, don't be shy, because you're going to have to, you know.
No, I hear you. Yeah, so, yeah. But the point is that if in those particular jobs with these low-paying jobs, there's also a higher amount of turnover. So,
right.
So there's cost to the employer of having to retrain people because people kind of, keep cycling out.
Right. Well,
if you're paying them a little bit more or a fair wage,
they may want to stay.
They may want to stay.
Right.
They may have opportunity to grow.
That's a good point.
But if they're doing their job better, that means they're more productive. So your business therefore becomes more productive.
Right.
And then you're providing a better service.
So you're saying it's an investment in the long term for the business and for the owner
to invest in your employees.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because the other thing that you didn't mention is that if you pay employees less, and not only is there a higher turnover, but there's a higher possibility of your taco shells be licked. And
let me ask you this. No, that's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And somebody taking off their shoes and mashing the potatoes at Wendy's with their feet. Or somebody taking a bath in the fucking sink where you're supposed to be washing the dishes.
Or somebody
urinating in the fucking salad.
When was the last time you went to an In-N-Out Burger, okay?
How
happy are these motherfuckers when you go to it? They're all like smiles and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
They get paid really well. They get paid better than most cooks do.
Right.
At a nice restaurant.
You know what In-N-Out Burger? You know how much they get paid an hour?
Was it 12?
Something like that.
Yeah,
between
like $12
and $15.
That's more than the cooks probably at a nice French restaurant
or
any of these restaurants downtown here.
That's a very good point.
And that goes with what Peter's saying.
That's a very good point.
I had In-N-Out Burger Friday night, driving back into L.A.
And they weren't rude, were they?
No, they're the nicest people. Like, we were retarded in the way we were ordering.
Of course.
And the guy was like, you know, take it off.
Fucking double special sauce, double patty with the onions, animal style eating motherfuckers. So you were acting a fool, and they were patient.
Like, hey, take your time, no worries.
They don't care.
Yeah. So,
and even the people waiting in line to eat a burger, they're also amicable.
So the average salary for an associate at In-N-Out Burger is $10.53 an hour.
$10.53. Okay,
that's average.
But that's average. But
that's
then
good.
If you're a cook, you're making $12.19 an hour.
Right.
So, and the longer you're there and the more you move up,
that
rate is going up.
That's a perfect example, and I'm glad you brought that up, Rich. That's a perfect example of what you're saying, Peter. You're saying that if the company invests in their employees, i.e. give them a little bit better benefits, and of course the better benefits initially is a better wage, you know, give them a better wage, they're apt to stay because they're apt to think, this is a good job. It's a good paying job. You know,
if people feel they're being taken care of, they're going to be loyal.
Why would you want to go somewhere else?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So good point. And In-N-Out Burger does take care of their people, and that's part of why they're all happy. And
that's why everybody loves them. It's a good product. The food is good. It tastes good. You don't have an asshole, like, you know, dealing with you because, you know.
And there's always a line going
into
a fucking line going into those places.
The lights are off and people are pulling up.
Could you imagine some people actually say In-N-Out Burger sucks?
No.
I mean, there's a whole slew of people that'll say In-N-Out Burger sucks. It's not that good. And I don't think it's that great. And all this other stuff.
They can say that, but they eat vegan. They're vegans.
Yes, right. In-N-Out Burger, we love them. So, okay, so you're in total support of $15 an hour. I mean, this is a discussion that can go on for hours.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because $15 an hour is more than 50% of the current minimum wage. So you're asking employers to double the minimum wage, which is, that's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people, considering that... I don't know how it is now, but the economy isn't necessarily 100%. People aren't buying. You know what I mean? I mean, people are buying, but I don't see people. I think I read an article where people who spend a lot of money aren't buying as much, meaning the richer people aren't buying as much.
Let me ask you this. If you have a society of people that have maxed out their credit and they can't get any more credit cards, and this society is dependent on people buying shit, like our society.
Right.
How are these companies supposed to actually make any money if the people that, you know, that they're employing or that are living in this society, how are they going to buy the shit?
Well, you see,
how does that work?
And
that runs right in line with that. They can't get any more credit. Yeah. It was really great a couple of years ago when people could mortgage their house or they could fucking get a credit card because they were giving credit cards to fucking anybody. Yeah. They're giving them to 16-year-olds.
Yeah, more than three.
To that point, though, today's Wall Street Journal, the U.S. government posted its biggest June budget surplus on record after receiving big dividend payments from mortgage giants Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae. So things are turning around. They're going slowly, but things are definitely getting better. The employment numbers are consistently month after month. Getting better, ticking up slowly.
So why did the stock market, for instance, the other day, like, fell because of the fear of the bonds not being...
Because of the fear of interest rates going higher. When interest rates go higher, bond prices go lower.
Right.
And so, you know, we've had very easy money. The Fed has...
So if interest rates go higher, that means people are less apt to borrow and less apt to spend.
Well, yeah, because it's going to cost more for you to borrow, and people have been basically borrowing money.
People who are rich were saying people are going to max out their credit and they can't buy more goods.
Yeah, they can't get another credit card.
But you're saying
the banks are going to want.
That the Fed's reported
The biggest June budget surplus on record after.
And what does that mean?
So basically, that
means Obama's turning it around.
Basically, the revenues that are coming in on a monthly basis are at a surplus. We're not running at a deficit month over month. So this June, it was the largest June surplus in 5 years, reflected broadly an improved fiscal outlook, as well as almost $67 billion in payments from two mortgage finance companies.
Got it. But here's this. More than three quarters of Americans say they are living paycheck to paycheck. More than three quarters, okay? With barely enough to scrape by in an emergency. Okay, in a survey of 1,000 adults, fewer than one in four said they had enough money to cover expenses for 6 months. Half said they had less than a 3-month cushion, while about a quarter said they had no savings at all.
So everybody's fucked, and what it comes down to is that people are spending less money and paying their bills. They're buying less from the companies. They're buying less from things, but they're paying the things that they have to pay.
Let me ask something.
Their mortgage, because they don't want to lose their house. That becomes a priority rather than a really expensive pair of kicks.
Much of what was driving the economy before everything, the bottom fell out in 2008 and 2009, was the fact that the real estate boom had taken off. People had all this positive equity that they were borrowing against and taking second mortgages on to go out and then live above their means got in this vicious cycle and got into this huge hole. And then when the economy tanked and a lot of people lost their jobs,
with that example, a lot of people are responsible, right? Point the finger at banks.
No.
No. Everyone's got, I always say this on the show many times, that the main problem in America is irresponsibility, okay? People in general do not want to take responsibility. You know what I mean? You got to take responsibility. Corporations got to take responsibilities. Banking industries have to take responsibility. The fucking government has to take responsibility. What happens is that there's a lot of finger pointing and, it wasn't me, I didn't do that. No, he's Republican. No, he's Democrat. No, and nothing ever gets done. Well, you know what I'm saying?
On the individual level, if you're hurting, it's because you're not saving. You're not putting aside.
But here's the deal.
But you got to have that BMW. You got to have iPhone.
That's here in LA.
That's the irresponsibility.
Well, that's part of the irresponsibility. Living within your means is economics 101.
Yeah.
My father didn't graduate from high school. My mother didn't graduate from high school. My mother worked at a factory, okay? My father was a fucking doorman, okay, in New York. A doorman, okay? So what I'm trying to tell you is I don't come from an educated view of economics, but the basics, what I learned from the basics was you live within your means.
Exactly.
If you have a dollar to eat, right? And it's you and me, Peter, then that means we have 50 cents each to eat, right, Peter? And you and I go to In-N-Out Burger and the fucking burgers cost a dollar. Guess what, Peter? You and I are going to split a burger, right?
Absolutely.
And then maybe I'm going to punch somebody in the head and take their soda because we didn't have enough money for the soda. You know what I mean? No, all jokes aside.
And how do you divide the soda?
But you take a sip and you take a sip.
But let me throw this in there. Your father or your grandfather, those previous generations, and this might not relate to anything, but they didn't have 10 Capital One ads on the Super Bowl. They didn't have this constant pressure and get credit cards.
I got it.
There is responsibility for the person. They need to resist all of those things.
I got it.
And they need to live it within the means.
I totally got it.
But the responsibility does lie with these companies too. If we inundate our society with the okay to put everything on credit, they're so short-sighted and they just want, they think that they're going to get it in the end, but they're not, because it's going to run out at some point.
Well, here's my opinion. Well, here's the flip side, okay? Not the flip side, but the other end, like you said, the corporations. You got to go back to America during a time when, in America, all goods and services were created in America, right? So you made things in America. You lived off the land initially, right? Then you created goods in America that you sold to Americans that worked in the plants where the goods were created, right? At some point, corporations decided or felt that it was better for them, economy-wise, to outsource their labor, to go to other countries, right? And instead of paying somebody here $3.25 an hour, let me just say this, Peter, because I may be full of shit completely and speaking on my ass, but let me finish my thought on this. Instead of paying somebody $3.25 an hour, which I think was $3.75 was the minimum wage back in the 70s, 80s, you can pay somebody, $3 a week in Thailand to do what it would cost you a couple thousand dollars. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Peter.
So, but you're talking about responsibility in that piece. And what companies started doing, like you said, was then shipping the jobs overseas, manufacturing the things overseas, jobs that were here in the U.S., especially like in the auto industry. Perfect example. So I remember, this is years ago, 15 years ago, but I remember reading a statistic that at one point, General Motors, because of their pension liability to their retired auto workers, because of their deal with the auto union, that $3,000 to $4,000 of the sticker price of one of their cars was just
for the pension.
For the pension.
Sure.
And so, but the problem though, which the auto companies didn't take responsibility for, was they were making shitty cars right. back then.
Just shitty cars. They were making cars that consumed more fuel. Okay? As a result, more fucking fuel costs more gas money. The Japanese came in and said, we can make a more fuel-efficient car, but smaller, faster, cheaper.
More reliable, that will run for 150, 200,000 miles.
Guess what happens to the fucking U.S. autos?
Exactly. But the fact is that they were making crappy cars. Right. They were making a crappy... It wasn't the workers' fault.
Right, no.
They were making the cars that they designed, that they said, hey, this is what we... Right.
Because they wanted to fucking be more cost... They wanted to make more money... on a product. See, I don't have a problem with passing the buck down. Okay, here's the deal. You just made a perfect example. So, $3,000 or $4,000 of the sticker price of that car goes to pay for the pension of an auto worker. So be it. What's the problem, right? So you pay for fucking $3,000 or $4,000, knowing that the money you're putting into a product that you're buying is going to help the person who helped make that car. In turn, that person's...
But the problem was that it was going into the price of the car that nobody wanted to buy.
So right. No. Got it. So you got to go way back before that when they started making... At one point, America made really good cars.
They did. Yeah. They did.
Who was the first? Mazda. I remember in the 70s, Mazda came in. Hyundai came in the 90s, right?
It was Honda and Toyota. It was Datsun.
Datsun, and they became Toyota.
No, they actually became Nissan.
Nissan,
right?
Got it.
But it was those came over here, and you know, gas started to spike, and you could buy a car that got 40 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, but gas didn't start to spike, Peter. Gas was always fucking expensive. I mean, hold on.
Our gas is still expensive. Cheap right. relative to what the rest of the world pays.
Is paying. Right. What happened? Here's a turning point. The oil embargo of the 70s, okay? That was a wake-up call to auto manufacturers to say, let's stop making 6 and 8 fucking cylinder cars, and let's try to do 4-cylinder cars, more fuel efficient, and make them better.
And they came out with that Mustang too.
Well,
oh, don't even talk to me about that shit. Well, listen to this. When I was a little kid, my dad, our first car was a red 67 Mustang convertible.
I
love that car.
That's a sexy car.
It was a sexy car. Red 67 Mustang convertible, black leather interior, was awesome. Started to have
that's because Larry's a sexy motherfucker.
Yeah, well, the sexy motherfucker traded in for a Mustang too. So
Oh my god.
I still haven't forgiven him for that shit. I mean, it's just.
Oh, traded in for it too, huh?
Yeah, flush the toilet for that one.
They tried to copy the Japanese and the, you know, with
oh man, that car
with the Mustang. Oh my god, Mustang that was terrible.
I mean, the American auto industry had a lot of flops. It's not just the Mustang, too. I think that was just the beginning for the Ford Motor Company.
Yeah, but that was a big one, though.
Oldsmobile had some fucked up shit. Chrysler had some fucked up shit. I mean, they all followed suit.
But then you had these companies like General Motors that had 4 or 5 divisions that were essentially making the same
car. The same shit.
I mean, right. I just, you know, how much
different
was it?
Different names, right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the grill was different, a different nameplate on it.
To try to corner the market.
And they all broke down the same, and they all sucked. And they were kind of, everybody, you know, there was like a conspiracy that these cars were kind of designed to break down, so you had to take them into the shop or you had to buy parts.
But then, you know, in the late 90s or in the 90s when oil prices were below or $2 a gallon or whatever.
How long have we been playing?
But, you know, you had a situation that they were building SUVs and oil prices were going to stay low forever. And then, you know, that's
we'll
all they would
go
manufacture.
About 10, 15
and then oil prices went through the roof and nobody wanted to buy SUVs. And then they were screwed again and they had to, you know, reinvent themselves. So, I mean, the U.S. auto industry for the last 30 or 40 years has not had their shit together.
They're always a step behind.
For the last 30 years, because
that's
you got
the last 30 or 40 years.
30, 40 years. You got to go way back to see what's happened
thing they
in
did
Detroit.
Right was the 67 Mustang convertible, right. basically. I mean, but that's.
I don't know. What about an 82 Cutlass Supreme?
Yeah. How about a DeLorean?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the problems when
Hold on a second. I haven't found a reason to play this, but I gotta do it. So you can just suck my cock. Break
up that bloodstone just the way of the wall. All right, thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Well, here's the problem when you're talking about jobs in the United States.
you're kind of like you're kind of multiplying pennies. You're not going to really, you know, all the people out there working jobs, you're not going to get ahead. Just do the math. You know, like if you're working, you talked about 40 hours a week. 40 hours a week, it's a finite number. You're talking about a finite amount of money that you're going to get in a finite amount of time in your life where you're healthy enough to work. And if you add up how much money you can earn times what you're going to need due to inflation and all the other economic factors, if you just have a job, guys, you're not going to make it in this country. You have to find some business. The whole country is designed that you own businesses, not that you go to work for somebody else with a business.
Yeah, but
well,
owning
somebody's
got to
work at that business,
right?
But the and who's going to buy?
Gonna be you.
And who's going to buy the product that you're making or the service that you're doing at that business?
So you shouldn't worry about the people working at the businesses.
I'm saying if you're one of the people working at the businesses,
and you're not doing
something on the side.
No, but then, but
time
but,
is not
hello,
on your
Mr.
side.
Hello, Mr. Griffin.
Everything's working against you.
Hello, Mr. Griffin. Are you hiring for babysitter?
But you have two challenges with that right now, is because it's still really hard for people, especially if they're starting a business, to borrow money.
Right, right.
So, I mean, the banks are not like...
You got to have money. You have to have equity in order to borrow.
I disagree.
You're talking to a man that comes from the bank.
Not all businesses require loans in the beginning.
Give me an example of a business that doesn't require a loan or a small
Amazon
capital.
Store, eBay store, selling products on Craigslist.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and that's a good
what are you
going to
sell
on
Craigslist?
But you buy it's standard. You buy something for a dollar, you sell it for two. What I'm saying is, if you only have a job. If you only have a job,
but does everybody have to be an entrepreneur in this country?
Yeah, but that's that's a pot smoker mentality.
No.
They have to
get ahead in the United States financially. Yes, you have to be an entrepreneur. If you're just working,
couldn't you have a good life not being an entrepreneur?
Okay, well, you use the ambiguous term good life. When you say good life, where are you deriving this from? A sitcom in which they have a good life?
No, I'm deriving it from being able to afford.
Let's just talk math.
Four things.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, if you're talking about it from a purely mathematical standpoint, no, you cannot have, you will run out of money.
Raise the volume.
You will run out of time. You will run out of money and time.
Yo, you know what that means? Straight the fuck up.
Do you agree with what I'm saying, Peter? Or do you think that you could still go to work for somebody else's company and still retire, still send kids to college, still own a home?
Well, that's the idea that's kind of laid out.
Americans who go work for other
companies,
but they're not retiring.
That's kind of the idea that's been laid out by everybody.
I'm telling you it's not true.
I don't think you're wrong, Simon, but I don't think your answer is the solution to the whole issue. Okay, it's a personal solution for you.
No, I'm saying if
you're an artist,
I'm saying if you're not making it financially and you only have one job, and you have only, so you're trading hours for dollars.
So you're
not
going to
have
eBay,
enough dollars, and you're not going to have enough
hours.
You're
saying eBay, and you're saying Craigslist. You're assuming that everyone that we're speaking of has a computer.
No, you just asked for an example. I can give you 10 examples.
Give me another example that doesn't require the computer.
The difference between eBay,
right?
And your job.
First of all, the difference between
eBay and your job is you can't make money at your job while you're asleep.
First of all, eBay.
You have a set amount of hours.
eBay. Fuck you, eBay. Okay. Fuck you, eBay. With the fucking fees and all this other bullshit. Fuck you, eBay. Okay. That's my take on eBay.
I gave you an example of a web-based e-commerce style business.
Here's some hope.
Where you could make money. And you're not bound by hours.
Here's
some
hope.
People going to school to learn something other than entrepreneurial things, they're kind of fucked.
Here's some hope.
I think you're in trouble.
You're wrong.
I think that's not how this economic, that's not capitalism.
You're wrong.
Okay.
Here's some hope. The U.S. economy, okay? The U.S. economy is expected to generate 55 million jobs by 2020.
It doesn't matter.
Let me finish. And 65 of them will require more than a high school diploma. If current graduation rates hold steady, the U.S. will wind up 5 million college-educated workers short. Okay, so here's the point.
They can have 150 million jobs.
Negative.
It doesn't matter.
Negative, because the emphasis now is going to be on education. Let's face it. We're not our parents that came to this country or our parents' parents that came to this country without any educational skills, without any job skills.
If everybody's education, no one has an education.
Dude.
If everyone has a diploma.
Go ahead, Peter.
So here's the thing. This is what separates America from the rest of the world. A lot of people in Europe, in Asia, who go and work for a lot of these, you know, they're multinational corporations and they have fat pensions and a lot of benefits and a lot more, quote unquote, job security, and they get to retire at, you know, 65 or whatever. But they don't have the our workforce is way more transient these days than it was, you know, 30 or 40 years ago.
Transient meaning they come and go.
So people switch jobs a lot more.
Right.
You know, 10, 15 years ago.
I could suck your dick for $10 and a lot longer.
Exactly. So, but the fact is,
I don't need benefits. I'll just swallow it. I'm not afraid of getting my throat infested. Go ahead.
But people, the thing about America is that people now have more portability with their jobs and are more apt to switch to go and pursue other opportunities, and there are more opportunities to pursue. When you look, our unemployment rates as high as they are and shitty as it's been for a lot of people for many years, relative to what the rest of the world's going through in Europe, those people are hosed there. I mean, right. you have right. over 20% unemployment.
Right.
So
right.
so the ability for people to kind of make their own destiny here and pull
it's
themselves
still
up.
It's still here.
And it's happening. And technology is where it's happening.
Especially with the technological advancements that are happening in our lifetime. One fucking second, things are changing like that, rapid fire, which goes into your arena. We discussed briefly, you were a headhunter, you worked in the stock market, but I didn't know that you moved over to from trading to being a headhunter in the technology sector.
Correct.
Briefly, give us a little rundown on that, and then I want to know how that translated to what you do now, which is you're getting... So
for many years, I worked in financial services. I worked in trading on the trading floor. I'd been down there for many years. And as time went on, more and more, you know, more and more of what I did became automated. And there was less dependence on human interaction in terms of
stock trading,
buying and selling the actual stock.
Yep.
They wanted less people involved in that. So, so I was able to transition from that and get into recruiting or headhunting, as you put it.
Recruiting experienced workforce.
Workforce, highly trained workforce. In most instances, a highly trained workforce is mostly people who are, you know, have a minimum bachelor's degree. A lot of them have master's in.
Yeah, but you were talking about software developers for banking industry, for corporate industry.
Yeah.
You were talking about that the business you were in, the financial sector, was being automated. So now banks and corporations needed new software to run their and facilitate their
to
new,
run their operations.
Right.
So you know, whether it's running a network of, you know, 10,000 ATMs, or if it's a loan origination system for a mortgage portion of a bank, or it's
loan origination system. What is that?
So a loan origination system is basically a computer system that manages the workflow of the loan process. So basically, if you go in to apply for a loan, you know, you fill out all the paperwork.
Cash call. I called them up. The guy takes my information. He inputs it in the computer.
And they do the credit checks.
They
look at that, what the rate is. Then what they call the back office is then usually once the mortgage is created, then banks then sell the mortgage off and they pull it into other mortgages, which created. So all those things are automated and
run by programs and software that are commonly used or widely used within the industry.
Within these industries, and especially with the consolidation within the banking industry. So these big banks were kind of gobbling each other up, and then they each had their own individual system, at which point those systems had to be merged, which is a big technological challenge for them. So that's the kind of stuff that I did coming out of working on Wall Street, was working for a company that provided resources to help do that. A lot of it had to do with storing, you know, like building big data warehouses to store lots of records and account information and
spying
records and stuff.
Because don't even get into that. But that's a perfect example of that whole industry changing from paper files to data files.
Yeah.
So where do you store all that shit? That wasn't a problem that was ever dealt with because it wasn't an issue.
How do you store it? How do you make it redundant? So if something breaks and you don't lose everything that you're
backed up and so you don't have to do the shit twice. It checks itself, right?
But it checks itself, but it also creates the ability for them to you know, look at the information that's being collected in a very organized way, very quickly, so they can make more real-time decisions in terms of how they run their business.
Now, you're not trained in all this. You were trained from the inside workings of the financial sector, i.e. the stock market.
Correct.
So this guy, a friend of your father's, hires you, and he hires you based on the fact that you understand the inner workings of who he is trying to hire people to work for, which are the banking people, the corporate businesses that are looking to develop software and stuff like that.
At the time, he had several customers that were large banks, large financial institutions, right, that were building these systems, and I understood how these systems worked from the inside.
From the inside. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of being able to, and it was helpful for their team of recruiters for me to help kind of educate them on that, and at the same time, they kind of taught me more about, you know, what the technology was that was actually, you know, the programming around the systems to do that. And I just slowly, you know, kind of learned what they did.
And this was what, like 95, 97?
No, this is 2000, started like 2004.
2004.
Yeah.
Okay, so like 9 years ago,
yeah.
This is when you got into the recruiting?
Recruiting, yeah.
Beautiful. Because I never heard of this. And like I said, I always thought you recruited like CEOs, CFOs for coming back. Because that's another type of recruiting.
Right.
So, okay. So how you're recruiting now for software developers for game?
For a game company, yes.
For a game company. Tell me about that.
So the company I work for makes a hugely popular online video game called League of Legends. And it is the most popular online game in the world right now. We have over 70 million registered users. We have over 32 million active monthly players and
22 million active?
32 million active.
32 million?
And we have probably 12.
You're telling me that there are that much fuck, that many marijuana smokers in America that
these
stay
home? These kids are...
They're not marijuana smokers.
No, these kids, it's a highly competitive game because it's a multiplayer.
Huh.
So it's two teams of five.
And you can join up. How does that work? I'm sorry. I'm not going to ask because I've never even seen the game. How does it work?
How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, so I log on.
You go.
I'm a player.
You go to our game. You download it. You load it onto your computer. You create an account. You log in, and you can. It's free. You can start playing it right away.
Right.
And basically,
How do I get on a team?
So here's the thing. You can. It's a very social game. A lot of people play it's very competitive, very social. So a lot of people have like networks of friends who play it together. So you can create a custom game with your friends to play.
What's it called?
It's called League of Legends.
League of Legends. Okay.
So and then the other thing is we have a part of our software is we have what's called a matchmaking system. So it will analyze your game history,
your skill,
your skill level, and then it will match you into a game of people of similar skill. So if you go online and you see none of your friends around to play,
so it's like a chat room or a community board.
Well,
and
you just go in
playing?
And it says, you know, put me in. It'll put you in, and then it will find a game for you, and then match you in, and from there you get and the game loads, and you go and play the game.
So the computer says you're a fucking loser. Here, the loser team, ping, and you go in there and you're like, quack, 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 quack. Oh, man. Do I have to play with the scrubs again? Even a League of Legend of League? What the fuck is it called?
Well, it's League of Legends.
League of Legends.
But the philosophy behind the game and the guys who founded our company were hardcore, passionate gamers.
Gamers, yeah.
So they wanted to be what they call the most player-focused game company in the world.
These are American guys?
Yeah, they're born here in L.A.
Nice.
I mean, they're local boys from L.A.
Nice.
They went to USC.
Nice.
They, after college, they were roommates. They
nice.
Started out on their careers doing, you know, they one was a management consultant in Bain, one worked at a marketing company here in L.A., but they always were kind of bitten by the bug to make a video game, and they kind of came up with this idea. Basically, they came up with a prototype, raised some money, and started building. They formed the company in 2006. They launched the game in 2009, and it is just taking off like wildfire. It's crazy.
How do they make their revenue?
They make their revenue through what's called buying stuff kind of within game.
So you need more missiles. Yeah,
well, it's actually not.
Oh shit! It's Sergeant, you need a condom. There's a hooker coming your way. Oh please! $3.
You've been online for 12 hours. You don't really need a condom. You just need one on the game.
So no, actually, the way it works is that you can buy what's called our in-game currency, and then you don't buy actual like weapons or anything. We have what we refer to as the game is based on characters, or we refer to them as champions. Mm-hmm. So you can then, if you find a champion that you like and want to play, you can buy that champion and then you own him forever. Or we create what's called custom skins, which give them a unique look and feel within the
identity,
game.
Identity, yeah.
Yeah, identity. And so the champions are really cool. A lot of the original champions when the game launched are based on people who actually work at the company.
Got it.
So they have kind of cool. They have kind of cool personalities and
cool special powers and shit.
Just cool powers and cool abilities, and our players really relate to them and, you know, create a deep emotional bond. But the other thing that's really cool about it is that there are a lot of people who play our game and actually never spend a penny, and they just the more games you play, you know, and the better you get at it, you're able to unlock more of the game. It just kind of takes longer,
like Zelda, like the Legends of Zelda.
Yeah, so sort of.
So this is pretty interesting. So how long have you been working for them?
About 2.5 years.
2.5 years. So the game is so obviously so popular,
correct,
and has a big following,
correct,
that the owners and the your bosses, the creators of the show, are constantly looking for other people to develop different aspects of the game, different levels.
So the thing that makes us different is unlike most traditional games that you would buy for your, let's say, your Xbox or your PlayStation, whatever, most of those games are developed over long periods of time. So like every year, every fall, Call of Duty comes out and you go to the store and you buy the next version of Call of Duty.
The next version.
So the thing that makes us a little bit different is that our game is under continuous development. So every couple of weeks, we're releasing something new into the game, a new feature, a new champion, new skins. So it's always changing. It's always evolving. So when the game launched in 2009, we had roughly 40 champions. We now have, I think, 117 total people, champions, the characters within the game.
That comes down to 117 rich motherfuckers that want to pay extra money to become champions and have big, long foreskins. Well, you know what? Kudos. That's ingenious.
Yeah, so it's...
That's ingenious.
But they've really kind of disrupted the industry in terms of how
shaken the whole industry for many reasons, because now you don't even need to get an Xbox. You can play this game online in your computer.
You play it on your Mac, you play it on your PC. It was originally a PC. We launched the Mac version a few months ago. And
you got some Japanese motherfuckers to come on board and be like, Konnichiwa!
Actually, one of the biggest markets for us is China. It's huge. The game is huge. Wow. In China, Korea, where video games are kind of like the national sports of Korea.
Video games are Cheerios.
Yeah, well, it's competitive, and one of the cool things is that there's a professional grade of player in our game, and we have a professional league, and so we just announced today actually that our world championships are going to be held at the Staples Center this October.
Oh, wow.
So so last year we had them at the Galen Center, which is the basketball arena at USC.
Oh, wow.
And we had like 9,000 people sold out.
Oh, wow.
And 8 million people tuned in online to watch the stream from around
the
world.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
I'm
going to have to go down there and do some NPR fucking interviewing and shit.
There you go.
Let's go down.
Did it knock down the World of Warcraft, or is that still going? Or
I mean,
I don't know that much about it. I just hear and...
World of Warcraft has dropped in popularity. Uh-huh. Our game is a little bit different because World of Warcraft is like a virtual world that just kind of goes on and on and on.
We're probably going to wrap it up.
Whereas our game is session based, so each game is like has a beginning, middle, and end, and typically lasts for about 40-45 minutes is a typical game for us.
So you don't drop out of college just to play a game.
I was talking to one of our directors of engineering, and he was telling me a story. He goes, "I met this guy who like dropped out of Stanford to play the game."
Sure.
But I mean, those are rare stories, but every major college campus, and I'm sure there are some college kids who are listening somewhere out in the NPR, Nestorius Public Radio universe.
I'm going to check it out.
But it's a lot of fun.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
What's the name of your company?
Riot Games.
Riot. I've heard of Riot.
Yeah.
Big up Riot Games, you fucking crazy motherfucker. Big up Riot Games. That's right. Awesome. Yo,
we could keep going for hours here.
We could keep going for hours.
Maybe we should light a fire and all just huddle around it and get some warmth.
No, because the other aspect of this is that you're a big social network geek. I mean, I'm using the word geek with a lot of affection.
No, I...
Yeah, I mean...
Affectionate geek.
No, you're the first person. You're the first person to ever tell me about Twitter. You were the first person ever.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember how long ago it was, but I was like, what are you doing on your BlackBerry? This is, and you were like, oh, I'm tweeting. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And you were like, well, yeah, you follow this person, then they follow you, and you post, and you told me about the Kogi barbecue truck, Korean barbecue, and you follow it, and you told me about that. And at the time, I thought, what the fuck are you talking about? It's so bizarre. Like, why should I be doing that? All of a sudden, you fast forward. I mean, when was the first time you got into Twitter?
I got into Twitter, I think it was back in 2008.
Got it. So that's how long it's been.
2008. And I was reading a lot about it in a lot of the tech blogs. And then I heard a story about it on the radio on the way into work one day. And I just went on and created an account and, you know.
And you were fucking tweeting.
And tweeting. It's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's cool if you know what the fuck you're doing, because whenever I go on, I still don't know what's going on. I mean, I went on today because I wanted to look at your tweet, you know, your Twitter account, I follow you, you're following me. And I just wanted to understand a little better, and I still don't understand it. And I wish we had another hour or two so we can talk about this with you. But what are the advantages of having a Twitter account if you're a business, let's say, or for instance, if you're a show like us that want to promote and we want to get more followers, more listeners? Obviously, that's what your company does on Twitter, right?
We have a huge Twitter following. We have a huge Facebook page. We actually have one of the top, I think, five YouTube channels on YouTube with our game. But, you know, for businesses, it's been a great tool for them to create a viral buzz in and around their whatever their product or services that they're offering. And especially one of the key drivers of Twitter is the ability to drive content. So you're generating content here with your show every week. So the ability to shoot out, you know, clips of your show or
on Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah. You know,
because you can upload
upload a soundbite and say, hey, here, you know, like last week you had what, Mason Pryor in here, and a couple weeks ago. So hey, if that person, whoever you're interviewing, is on Twitter, you say, hey, we interviewed at so and so on Twitter. Here's a sample. Tune in this week. And you know, it kind of builds off itself. And the cool thing is, if the people who you're bringing in here who have, you know, significant networks, they then can, you know, retweet your tweet or, you know, shout out at you and say, hey, you know, listen.
So it's basically, you know, turning on a light bulb and having all the flies or the bugs come at it, and then redirecting that light bulb to other places, and the flies just keep...
It's creating awareness. Creating visibility. And Twitter has evolved. And so,
I haven't. But
so they have, they have a way to, you know, you can advertise, use it as an advertising platform to advertise your product or service. But
yeah. You know. No, it's fucking hot in here.
Simon,
we're gonna wrap
right?
it up.
I think Simon's melting.
He's melting.
Let me just take my shirt off.
So anyway, this is the camera. We're on the live stream.
Yeah, guys.
So
I'm just gonna take my shirt off.
You say hi. So you know what? That's a lot of information. What we're gonna do is we're gonna take Peter out for drinks and some coffee and some dessert or something.
If anyone has some blankets, we could borrow.
sometime soon.
An electric blanket too.
No, we're gonna get a Twitter fucking lesson or a couple, because we really need to get up on that. But anyway, we're gonna wrap it up.
This.
We're gonna wrap this up. And say thank you so much, Peter, for coming in. Will you come back another time?
I would love to.
Really?
Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know you were very enthusiastic about my show, and I really, really appreciate it.
I love the show.
I know you do, and I really love people with enthusiasm about my show. You know me for a long time. So people ask me a lot of times what this show is, and I like to tell them I'm bringing the street corner to your ear. You know what I'm saying? So... we want to say thank you very much to Peter Grossman. All the best to Riot. You know what I'm saying? And again, tune in every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m. here on SkidRowStudios.com. That's a Pacific Standard Time, midnight to 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go to our website, Nestorius NestoriousPublicRadio.com. Go to Facebook, Facebook.com/ Nestorious Public Radio. Like us. And you know what, man? While you're there, pull up your pants, go to Twitter, and follow me on Nestorious NYC at Twitter.
We'd like to thank Satan for providing heating and air cooling and conditioning for the program.
That's right. What you guys don't know is that in here, the air conditioning system gets turned off after 6 o'clock, so there's no air. Not that we'd be able to have air on because we're recording live. You know what I'm saying? So,
support for NPR comes from Satan, providing efficient heating and air non-cooling systems to Skid Row Studios.
Big the fuck up to all your motherfuckers that listen to us every fucking week. Big up! Big up!
Get it off, get it off, let it off. Get it off, get it off, let it off. Get it off, get it off, let it off. Get it off, get it off, let it off.
It's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.
It just happens. I get prepared.